You may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Stuart Raphael for the Fairfax County School Board. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Three, yes.
The Circuit Court was wrong in this case to vacate the school board's imposition of discipline on the ninth grade student in question. She engaged in seriously inappropriate sexual misconduct involving touching three other female students during school hours on school grounds. She touched one girl on her breasts, another under her shirt, and a third between her legs during their world history class. She had three opportunities to hear the accusations against her and to present her side of the story. Once when she was confronted with the accusations by the assistant principal, again at a disciplinary hearing in front of two hearing officers appointed by the division superintendent, and a third time when she appealed her case to the school board in writing. At the disciplinary hearing before the hearing officers, she admitted that she had engaged in the sexual touching. She claimed it was consensual. Neither of the hearing officers found her credible. And for that reason, the discipline imposed was an affirmance of the suspension, reassignment to an alternate school for the rest of the ninth grade school year, and then she was permitted to enroll in a regular high school in her 10th grade year.
Mr. Raphael, may I ask you just a record question? And tell me if I have my facts wrong or my logic wrong. It seems as though the holding of the trial court distinguished between what the court said was a newly minted charge, offensive touch student charge, which, as you point out, is really a reporting code under the State Board of Education regs, and what would otherwise have been a proper lesser included charge of improper touching of another person, parenthetical, whether or not consensual parenthetical, which was in the handbook.
That's right.
And clearly a lesser included of assault, battery, and any other such greater charge. When I go to 554 of the joint appendix and I read what the hearing officers held, I see, quote, indeed, improper touching of another person, this is all in quotes, parens, whether or not consensual inference, is a violation of the SRNR, the student handbook.
That's exactly right.
So what am I missing?
You're not missing anything. I think the circuit court acted as if that had not been found. The circuit court acted as if the only finding had been offensive touch student.
Yeah, the quote that the circuit court gives is of the top of the sentence of that paragraph, but doesn't mention the conclusion of the paragraph.
That's exactly right.
What's the best argument that you're wrong and I'm wrong?
We'll probably hear from that.
We'll find out. I think it's a pretty straightforward case. There are two issues, I think, in the case. The first issue is, does the conduct for which the student is disciplined have to be in the student manual? And there are two answers to that.
It's by 554.
Yes. So there are two answers. It's in the manual, as you point out. And the other answer is, even if it weren't in the manual, under Bethel versus Frazier, she was plainly on notice that this type of conduct would subject her to discipline. So I think on that first issue, the circuit court just got it wrong. The second issue is the lesser included offense issue, which the circuit court really didn't wrestle with. But as Your Honor points out, we think that either improper touching or offensive touch student is a lesser included offense within the greater offense of sexual battery. And the circuit court just didn't address that question at all. But we think it's dispositive here. Just to clarify further to what Justice Kelsey said, the reporting requirement for the State Board of Education, they have codes where they have to report what the offense was. One code would be for sexual battery, which, consistent with the criminal law, requires threat of force, intimidation, ruse. It's a more serious charge. The other lesser charge is offensive touch, which is any unwanted sexual contact. It's not in the joint appendix, but copies of those provisions of the State Board manual are in the record at page 727 and 728. And we had a URL site to the 2017 version, although I just double-checked that, and it's been superseded by the 2018 version. But the court can find a copy in the record.
As you're reading the trial judge's logic, does it appear that the trial judge, when the trial judge looks at sexual battery in the abstract, is thinking common law as opposed to common law battery, which is offensive touching? versus statutory battery under the criminal code, which requires force, threat, or intimidation, which is the argument made by at the hearing.
That's right. Ms. Van Lowe's argument all along was that the student was charged with sexual battery. Sexual battery, as defined in the criminal code, not the common law definition, but the criminal code, requires these elements of intimidation, force, coercion, ruse. And that didn't exist in the case. Therefore, she shouldn't have been found to have committed anything. But even Ms. Van Lowe at the disciplinary hearing recognized that under the student's account of what happened, the student ultimately admitted to all of this sexual touching. She claimed it was consensual. The hearing officers didn't believe that. But her lawyer's argument was it was consensual, don't punish her as much. That was the essence of it. On the sexual battery argument, her argument was there wasn't evidence to convict of sexual battery. So when the hearing officers came back and said, we find improper touching reported as offensive touch, not sexual battery, then her argument to the school board in the written appeal was that was unfair because she was charged with sexual battery, not something lesser than that. But so it's just Hornbook law.
The inconsistency is changing the definition of special sexual battery from the statutory definition, which was argued below, to a common law definition, and thus a false conflict between
yes.
the ultimate holding of the hearing officers.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I'd point out the Kaufman versus Garnett case from 2003, which I think was written by Justice Lacey, where this court defined assault as an act intended to cause either harmful or offensive contact with another person. And so, and the court didn't say, and by the way, this is how we define offensive contact. It's a common law idea that it's improper contact. And so if this court didn't have to define it, certainly the school board should have had to define offensive contact in its SR&R.
Y'all don't frame it this way, but this case looks like an inconsistent verdict case that we hear in criminal courts generally. You see the analogy? Because the trial judge's argument was that she was acquitted of one charge but convicted inconsistently of another charge. But the inconsistency depends on how you define sexual battery.
I think that's right, but I think the twist here is that the circuit court sits really in an appellate capacity. It's reviewing the decision of the school board to see if it was arbitrary and capricious or lacked substantial evidence. And given that standard, the circuit court was clearly wrong. This court reviews the circuit court's decision de novo as if it's the reviewing court in the first instance.
So your point is even there was no inconsistency in fact, but even if there were, it still is not appropriate to reverse.
That's exactly right.
I mean, this is the school disciplinary context. I
yes.
mean, to import, you know, these criminal law where it's prison, it's your liberty, it's a whole different ball game than a non-lawyer high school principal just trying to get students to behave.
That's exactly.
I think it would be anyway. I mean, I understand the argument about well. Even if we import all these criminal law concepts into the school disciplinary context, it doesn't work in this case. We shouldn't be importing those at all as a threshold matter.
That's exactly right, Justice McCullough. And the two citations for that, I think, are Bethel versus Frazier, where the court said a school discipline manual doesn't have to be like a criminal code, and Matthews versus Eldridge, where the U.S. Supreme Court said that the type of courtroom procedures you expect in a judicial setting don't necessarily, and you generally don't apply.
Practically speaking, can't.
Exactly, in an administrative setting. And that's why you don't have a right to cross-examine witnesses in a school disciplinary setting. There are lots of rules that apply in court that don't apply in a school disciplinary
There's
setting.
There's no Brady obligations, so you don't have to constitute a grand jury and indict, I mean, and on down the line.
That's exactly right. And we pointed out that the student in this case was quizzed at the beginning of the school year on her understanding of the Student Rights and Responsibilities Manual. This is at page 320 of the Joint Appendix, and she answered the question correctly. A student who touches another student intentionally in his or her private areas will face disciplinary action and may be reported to the police. So she understood that the conduct in which she engaged would subject her to discipline. She admitted the conduct. She claimed it was consensual. That really wasn't a defense under the SR&R, but as a practical matter, the hearing officers didn't believe that she was telling the truth. And it would create a perverse incentive, going back to the issue of this lesser-included offense idea, really create a perverse incentive if the trial court were right that you could only find a student to have committed the offense charged and nothing lesser than that. Usually the lesser-included offense doctrine is there for the benefit of defendants. And here it benefited this student because she ultimately was found to have committed an offense that was less than the sexual battery that she was initially charged of having committed. This case is really a straightforward, easy due process case applying the basic concepts of Gosby-Lopez, that the essence of due process is notice of what the case is against you and an opportunity to tell your side of it. And this student had three opportunities to do that. So due process was plainly satisfied, and the circuit court erred in setting aside the school board's disciplinary action, and I'd reserve the balance of my time.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Melinda Van Lowe. I am here on behalf of the student in this case, SC. I did want to make the court aware of the fact that SC and her mother are here in the gallery today, sitting behind counsel table. I want to make sure that we kind of focus the discussion here. First of all, this student, while the school board talks about this incident with her, if you look at her teacher narratives, which are beginning on the joint appendix at page 309, they talk about a student that has a positive attitude and seems motivated to succeed, that she is positive and works hard, that she is academically motivated. She can read and write well and finishes work before many of her same-aged peers. That she works well in groups and independently. She is almost always on task and hardly needing redirection.
Ms. Van Lowe, may I interrupt you for a minute?
Yes.
The trial court below held that she was charged and convicted of something. She was convicted of something she was not charged with, to use the criminal vocabulary. And the trial court specifically held that the due process violation was that she was found guilty of, quote, offensive hyphen touch student, end quote, which was not in the handbook. At page 554 of the joint appendix is the hearing officer's findings, in which they quote the handbook word for word and say, improper touching of another person, parenthetical, whether or not consensual, parenthetical, is a violation of it, and that's what she was found guilty of. So if I'm missing something, now's the time to tell me, because it seems like the whole predicate of the holding of the trial court is simply a mistake.
Sure, and I will take you through the ruling. Take you through the analysis. If we start with the rubric of the Student Rights and Responsibilities Packet, and that's at JA 343, very specifically, first of all, it's important to note that the students don't receive this. These regulations that we're poring over as lawyers is not what the students actually receive, and that's very clear from the second sentence that says students will receive a shortened version that is appropriate for their age, and teachers will review the rules with them during the first weeks of school. What counsel talked about in terms of the test that the student took in this case, on page 320 of the joint appendix, you'll note that says it also can be completed in groups. So it's not necessarily that this particular student sat down and necessarily did this herself.
Do you have access at the podium to page 554 of the joint appendix?
I do, Your Honor.
Can you tell me the paragraph that I'm reading from? I'm reading it to be the hearing officers telling us what the hearing officers found. Am I reading it incorrectly?
Respectfully, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Why?
If you go back to page 343 of the joint appendix and you look down at the last sentence, it says, in any dispute, the official regulation in effect at the time of the incident will govern and will supersede the language in this guide. So we look at the joint appendix, page 383, which is assault. That's the regulation. And assault has many different two, an A and a B to it. Assault under A, 3, is threatening or assaulting, physically assaulting another student or any other person. We get to subsection 5 of that, and it is improper touching of another person, whether consensual or not, which is what Your Honor has identified. We then look at subsection B, and that talks about, in subsection 1, sexual assault or battery upon a person. When you look at the letters, in terms of the notice issue, the letters that the student and her parents received in this case, they start at the Joint Appendix 541. On February 23rd, the school gives this student a letter stating that she is being accused of sexual assault. The principal then makes a referral to the division superintendent and says that she is accused of sexual battery. This same mistake is made in the March 2nd letters, in which the principal says your student is being punished for sexual battery, and then the referral says sexual assault. So that's the notice that this student received of what she is accused of. This is confirmed by her understanding of what she is accused of is confirmed by a reference letter that is sent, in which the person that's writing the reference letter says, "It's my understanding that this student is under investigation, having been accused of sexual misconduct, assault, and perhaps even battery." Consistent with what those letters state. We then get to the student discipline history, which is at JA304. There, if you look at the violation that it states, it's stating it says B-A standard, no injury. Battery, assault, standard, no injury. Again, falling under the assault rubric.
Yeah, the trial court ruled that there was no due process violation in the pre-hearing notice.
Correct.
Okay, so then you're okay there.
So then we get to the letter at 554. And when the hearing officer writes her opinion, she discusses improper touching of another student. She does not find that there is evidence to support improper touching of another student.
She said there was evidence of, quote, sexual touching. She says that she rejected the evidence presented by the student that it was consensual. And she suggested that she did not believe, quote, the student's denials, end quote. And that, quote, improper touching of another person, whether or not consensual, is a violation. So isn't that the holding? Isn't that the hearing officer's statement of what the hearing officer found?
The interesting part about the section that you just read is that none of that applies to what she was accused of by the letters. Because
right.
Remember,
so
she was...
Is it a lesser included? It's not sexual battery. That's a given. It's not sexual assault. The question is it a lesser included? The trial court said it would have been if what I just read is what the hearing officer found, and I'm asking you, it looks like the hearing officer found it.
No, Your Honor, it is not a lesser included offense. When we get down to the last page, the last paragraph on page 555 of the joint appendix, again, we've had sexual assault, sexual battery, the disciplinary record says that she is being accused of assault and battery, no injury. When we get to the hearing officer's letter in the last paragraph on page 555, she states that inappropriate touching of a student rose to the level of sexual battery. It says, based on the information provided at the hearing officers were unable to determine from the school official whether the student's inappropriate touching of a student rose to the level of sexual battery. So what the hearing officer here is saying is, we accused this person of sexual battery, and I don't have enough evidence from what I heard at the hearing to be able to confirm that that's what she did.
Correct.
So that's it. And then she says, Ms. Rizzuto reported that the school's resource officer, not what I had argued at the hearing, but that the school resource officer reported that a possible charge in this case would be battery, but not specifically, say, sexual battery. As such, I'm directing the school officials to amend the disciplinary record, that disciplinary history that I pointed to erase battery, sexual assault, battery assault of a student, no injury, and remove that from the record. And then we're going to replace it with offensive touch student, which the school board has agreed, has conceded, is nowhere in the student rights and responsibilities regulations, which is supposed to guide this case.
But is that even required?
Yes.
I mean, that's my problem. It's one thing to say, student, you know, we think you cheated on a test. And then you bring the student in and say, well, what we're actually going to discipline you on is you skipped out on school for a couple days. Completely separate. But you want this kind of fine-grained analysis from criminal law, and I can't find a case anywhere that says, for instance, we charge you with burglary in the nighttime, but the Commonwealth's evidence is you did it in the daytime. There's a gap, there's a problem, motion to strike, granted, whatever. But in the school system, where they're not trained in law, these principals are trying to get the kids to behave, how does that kind of specificity under due process ever come into play?
It comes into play, Your Honor, because Goss versus Lopez says that students have rights. They have a due process right.
Right. Notice and opportunity to be heard.
Correct. And so the notice has to be, and the reason that we get notice is so that when I go to that disciplinary hearing like I did in this particular case, and it's my understanding that she's accused of sexual battery, and I go to the Student Rights and Responsibilities Manual, and I look at the regulation, and I look what that definition is, and I come prepared with my evidence to contradict that, and I come prepared with my questions to cross-examine the hearing officer, excuse me, the administrator in this case, that I am then preparing my case for that charge, that allegation.
Right, because you're a lawyer and that's how you prepare, but a lot of these folks just show up with their parents. They're not going to mount some kind of, you know, challenge to the mismatch or whatever. And couldn't you even write the manual to just have a narrative flow of this is the behavior we expect as opposed to subsection A, B, 1, 2, 3?
No, Your Honor, because we're taking away a constitutional right that a child has in this particular case pursuant to Goss v. Lopez. And so, no, we can't have just a general loosey-goosey type thing. We have to give them notice. And regardless of whether they walk in with an attorney or they walk in with their parent, they need to know what they are being accused of so that they can provide information to counter it, whether they're an attorney or whether they're not. They need to know what they're being accused of. And in this particular case, administrator says, you're being accused of A, you're being accused of A, you're being accused of A.
We go to improper touching a lesser included charge of A.
I don't think that we can make that determination, no, Your Honor, because
You don't think you can make the determination or no, because that is a determination.
No. The regulation that I pointed to in terms of assault, offensive touch student is not anywhere included.
I didn't ask that. I asked if improper touching, which is in the manual, is that a lesser included offense of assault and battery or any of the sexual larger charges?
Improper, it is listed in the regulation under assault, yes, except for the fact that she wasn't accused of improper touching.
Okay, this is a very important question. I don't want you to answer because I'm asking you. Is this charge, I'm going to read it to you from the manual, quote, improper touching of another person, parenthetical, whether or not consensual, end parenthetical, end quote, is that charge, which is verbatim from the manual, a lesser included offense, under your argument, of the things that she was actually initially charged of having committed?
No. If you look at the manual under assault, they are different things. They fall under the assault, they fall under, in the regulation, under assault, but they are different and distinct things. And again, I want to go back to the point that that's not what she was notified as being accused of. So, again, the students in these cases have to be able to know what they're accused of and have to be
able
to
defend against
them.
But is the accusation of conduct, in other words, you got in a fight or you touched somebody or you cheated, or is the notice, as with an indictment, this specific section of a manual, subpart, Romanet, whatever?
It is both, because in an indictment we talk about the, and we cite the code section, and we also cite the indictment. But as everyone I think can agree, this is not a criminal case. This is an administrative matter before the school board and the superintendent's office. And if this student had had the opportunity to understand that if she put on a successful defense of the allegation, which is sexual battery, which is what she did in this case, but that she was going to be disciplined for something else anyway, then we would have addressed the something else, the B, that she was actually found, the offense that she was found to have committed, at the hearing. But instead, we didn't find that out till we're on appeal. Counsel states that we have several opportunities to be heard, including an appeal to the school board. That's too late. The appeal, the notice, the time to be heard is at the superintendent's hearing, and that's when we needed to understand exactly what the hearing officer was going to allege. This is a due process issue for students to understand what they're being accused of. And it's not just a matter of, respectfully, trying to get students to behave. Students are subject to a lot more dire consequences for this than just they didn't behave. Because this particular student ended up having, if I may finish my sentence.
Yes, indeed. Right ahead.
This particular student ended up missing 21 days of school. She ended up having to go to an alternative learning center and not a traditional high school. And those were the consequences. And she was suspended for 10 days before this even got to a hearing. And those were the things that she had to suffer as a result of this, as a result of these allegations. So it is a right of a student to be notified of the offense for which they have to defend, and that is the point of this litigation. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Raphael?
Just briefly to correct a couple mistakes, I think, that my friend made. Students do receive a copy of the entire regulation. That's reflected at page 339 of the joint appendix at the beginning of the manual, where it says it includes Appendix D, which has all of the regulations. The handbook's also online. It's a family handbook that's given to all the families. With respect to this student's knowledge that what she did was wrong, we pointed out the quiz at the beginning that every student answers. She answered correctly the question that she knew that touching somebody in their private areas would subject her to discipline. She also admitted that at the hearing itself at page 490 and 491 of the joint appendix. Ms. Van Loo mentioned that the student was suspended for 21 days. That's not correct. It's 15 days. It's calculated at page 2 of our reply, where we correct that misstatement as well. With regard to the argument that this is somehow not a lesser included offense within sexual battery, that's just plainly wrong. The entire argument of SC's lawyer below was this conduct did not rise to the level of sexual battery within the criminal code section 18.2-67.4. That code section says this: an accused is guilty of sexual battery if he sexually abuses, as defined in 18.2-67.10, the complaining witness against the will of the complaining witness by force, threat, intimidation, or ruse. And then you go and you look at the definition of sexual abuse in 67.10, and it says an act committed with the intent to sexually molest, arouse, or gratify any person where the accused intentionally touches the complaining witness's intimate parts or material directly covering such intimate parts. That's the charged offense, if you will, the sexual battery. And what this student did here was admittedly touch two girls on their chest and another between her legs, clearly a lesser-included offense within that element.
Does the school board have to, or a school division, have to have a manual? Does due process require existence of a manual? I understand why they do it. There's lots of good reasons. I'm picturing a country school,
right?
You know, back in the day, you know, in the little classic, you know, and they don't have on the website, you know, all the subparts. And I'm just trying to figure out where this takes us.
I agree with you. I don't think a school, as a matter of constitutional law, has to have a student manual that sets out these things. It certainly, you know, helps to make sure everybody's aware of what the rules are. The state code does require schools at the beginning of every school year to tell parents what the rules are. And that's why Fairfax and on every other school.
But we're talking due process. And
we're talking, that's exactly right. We're talking due process. And then the last thing I'll say about the lesser-included offense issue is that there's a good case that the VSBA cites in their amicus brief from the Court of Appeals, NAT, G-N-A-D-T versus Commonwealth, which held that an assault was a lesser-included offense within the criminal code section for sexual battery. If there are no further questions, we think that the error below is plain. This court should reverse and enter final judgment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.